in fact, we did have everybody's attention. Okay, I hope you've all had a good little break. I'm going to rapidly introduce to you Mike Skeet, who is going to show us all about his surround sound microphones. So let's get rolling.
Somebody thought that this was a car boot sale. We start that end, and when we get to this end, this is the alien monster. We will discuss that later. I don't want to hang about on things, so let's see what happened to me in the 1982. I used to have a job, and then I had a hobby prior to that for many years, so I started doing what I'd done and got paid for it to a degree. And I used reel-to-reel tape recorders like Tambergs, Revoxes and Tiacs way back, and mainly Calrec microphones. And some of them were unbalanced, and I remember working in a church near Milton Keynes, where I live, and lo and behold, I was listening on the headphones to this choir singing, and I heard this voice saying, "Constable Smith here, outside the bank. I don't see anybody at the moment," because it was coming through on the unbalanced Calrec feed, so I learned a lot that day. I had Dolby A, and it was razor blade editing. In the early 80s then, guess what happened? Because I'd written about various things and talked about it, and lo and behold, Sonny gave me an F1 and the Beta recorder for it. Calrec gave me a Soundfield microphone of the early models, and then a pair of ESL63 quads came from them. And I did a number of things with it to try and publicise them, and I hope it worked for them. I eventually paid for the quads, but the other stuff didn't get paid for, and never asked for it. Anyway, I did the editing again on analogue, so I had to copy from the F1 in analogue to the reel-to-reels, and I was using Dolby A originally, and then I got Dolby SR. And I've still got it somewhere, but I haven't used it for years. And then back to the digital for the CDs that were being made by other people. Early 90s, computer editing came along for me, and I bought the system, and I still use it in a laptop now, because it was something else which is still sitting in my room. And lo and behold, on the laptop I can go to people's houses and edit after they've done a session. And it's very nice, because you get fed, you see, so that's why you do that sort of thing. I've made DIY mic amps, preamps and small mixers for many years. And then I had DAP F1 came along. That's the, DAP1 DAP machines. And I had three of those, two in a box together, so I had a backup recorder on site. And that was used for many, many years. You know, there's hundreds of DAP machines lying around, DAP tapes lying around the house. And I even often used an HHB mini disc recorder. And you might wonder why. Well, whoops, on a session, I can then copy it with the take numbers, maybe 30 or 40 takes in each mini disc, automatically to CD to give to the producer or the artists. And that was a great asset. Obviously, I did the work then from the other machines I was using at the time. And it's moved on now, of course, to SD cards. And almost every bit of kit I've made has got an Olympus built in it. And I was a backup one elsewhere sometimes in another little box. Any thoughts on what you did in the past?
Not in public.
All right, let's start again. The stereo mic rigs. Well, I've never been happy with two cardioids like that. There's no space, but that works. ORTF, 110 or 90 degrees, whatever you choose to do. 17 centimetres, same as the ear. That works, so I have used that, and other people do good recordings with whatever they use. There's no doubt about that. I've written down something here, yes. Cross figure of eights, I don't like that at all. Anybody use cross figure of eights? Because it's a standard system, apparently, and you would obviously praise it, and I'm sure you get a good result. But I was never happy with them, you know. It didn't strike me as being what I wanted to carry on progressing with, so that got pushed to the side. The Decca Tree, would you believe it, I made one. Never used it. And I loaned it to somebody who put a DPA 4006 there and one here and one there, and he did a fine recording with it. And, you know, I just made it out of wood and that was it. And I don't want to trip over it, so I'll move it out of the way. What was the next stage in my life? Ah, spaced omnis. I use them on a piano. There's a couple of DPAs here, and these are the cones you put on to make them less directional at high frequencies, if not completely non-directional at high frequencies. And I use them about that distance apart on a piano, and I'm sure John Willett does that too. Yeah, and it works on pianos. You don't want the imaging, because in my view, spaced omnis don't give you the imaging that I'm chasing all the time, you know. So pianos, who cares? You know, it just sounds much better. And there's one big advantage. In the Wigmore Hall, the piano's here, the player there. I go down to the tail of the piano, clear of the lid. I don't like the lid pushing stuff at the mic, so I go slightly high. And would you believe it, when the audience clap, you don't have to fiddle with the stereo. It comes out equally on both channels, whereas if you're using an M&S pair or a stereo pair of any sort, you really need to alter it later to make it sound uniform, you know. So there's an advantage to these things. However, what have I used omnis in? Dummy head. And I'll pass this round because I love people to see it. It's got DPAs in it, and it's homemade, of course, so it falls to bits quite well, and it's 20 years old now. And guess what is in here? It's flower sieves and ladies' tights. And I went to the co-op to get some tights, and the young ladies behind the counter were very concerned. So when I finished it, I went back with the complete thing, and they were very put out by that. They couldn't understand it. So, what do I do with a dummy head that is probably not, it's affecting the binaural quite, well, not a lot. But normally the dummy head has its ears facing sideways, and I don't like it on speakers. These work on speakers because these have both got the center soundstage covered, and that's what I believe I needed, the compromise between the two. You may want to push it round, row after row, and poke your nose on it, or whatever.
Mike, is that omnis in there?
Oh yes, it's the 4006s. The original omnis, with the balls on them, which make them a little bit more directional at high frequencies, actually, I believe.
They lift the response on a flat from about 3 to about 10 k's.
There you are. That's nice to have that confirmed, because I was told that, but, you know, I don't measure anything.
Yeah, when I measured them, so.
Oh, well done. I've never measured anything, you know. And, of course, handling noise is the most wonderful thing about an omni. You don't have any handling noise of any great degree, and the wind protection works so much better because the diaphragm is a fixed situation in its construction, and it's immune to wind largely, and certainly handling noise. The resonances from cardioids and things is dreadful at times. Any thoughts on that while I think about the next stage?
Elegant use of gaffer tape.
Yes, gaffer tape, I know, terrible. And bits of foam, sprayed with paint. Right, let's talk about the Soundfield microphone. The latest version, or not, it's one of the versions they sell, it's the A-format arrangement, it's the SPS-200, and lo and behold, you see where the capsules are pointing there, four in a tetrahedral array covering 360 degrees in every direction. And the thing is, it has to be converted to an omni and three figure of eights. A figure of eight X forward to back, a figure of eight sideways, and a figure of eight, which is the Y, and a figure of eight up and down, the Z. And that's what you use to make it produce the results you want, be it mono, variable, polar patterns, stereo, be it surround in the past, which was ambisonics, and then periphery, where you had height and floor speakers and everything, but that's impractical. And also 5.1 and 5.0 these days. When I say 5.0, I mean I'm not interested in the sub being a separate unit. If I have a sub, it's tied to my front two speakers in my house, you know, if I use it, not that often. Any thoughts on the Soundfield processing? Because I have fiddled around with it in my own DIY things, and I get somewhere with it. But curiously, the figure of eights they create haven't really got one of the vectors covered, have they? And I don't know whether I'm on the right lines by proposing something later. Let's see what happens. And of course, it's M&S decoding. Once you get to the W and the XYZ, what do you do with them? Let's consider that. You've got a W, and you've got the forward-facing one of these, and it's out of phase at the rear. Okay, there's no out of phase on this one. So those two are in the same phase. So when they're added together, you end up cancelling the rear pickup, if it's pointing where it should come from, and you obviously end up with a cardioid. I'm sure you know all that, so we needn't say any more about it, but that's what I like to tell, you know, apprentices and things that come to my place to find out what goes on, and that's how you get the cardioid, by adding the, and you can have a cardioid forward, you can invert the phase of this and add it to the Omni, and you get a cardioid back, and the Y one sitting sideways, you can have it in phase that way and get a cardioid that way, and then invert the phase of it and get a cardioid that way. And of course, you've got the Z as well, up and down, and it would be able to create a cardioid up and a cardioid down. And then you could M&S those with the appropriate figure of eights to go where you want to go. Do you follow that? I mean, I'm not saying you shouldn't follow it, but that's what I learned in the end about it. And of course, you can end up with a slightly different directional mic on occasions, with a hypercardioid with a slight rear pickup. And we'll talk about that a bit later, because that's what you end up with when I do my stereo, M&Sing, you know. However, any thoughts?
Any thoughts on the original Soundfield to where they are now? Changes that have taken place?
Well, they're doing well in football stadia, aren't they?
Well, I actually meant for you, for the recordings that you've done from the original Soundfield mic to the latest one.
Well, I think they've been improved, and as far as I know, the software decoding of it is probably more accurate than what we had in the past, because there were certainly feelings that it wasn't really directional enough on occasions and all that sort of thing. And I used it a lot, and I even left it on the beach. Oh, no, was it that? No, it was a dummy head. I left a dummy head on the beach once down in Surrey, went to a pub, and when I came back, it was still there with the F1. And lo and behold, I played it back, and there was some footsteps coming along. They stopped. What the hell's that? And then they walked on. I want to rush so that we don't waste time at the beginning. So, now, when I used the Soundfield, I invariably used it with the stereo polar pattern set to hypercardioid. I really did. It sounded right. You know, you're there, you're monitoring, you think it's right. And I usually ended up there, not with what you could get, which is cardioid side to side and an omni more effect in stereo. So guess what? When you use a cardioid mid and side, you end up with hypercardioids crossed. So you've got a little bit of that phase rear on the go to be part of the sound. And I think that's why I liked it somehow. I don't know why. I just felt that was the right answer. Any thoughts on that by anybody?
What did you tend to monitor on?
Well, I used headphones on site often, but we ended up with some Quad ASL63s. And one day I was coming around a corner and a car was coming towards me, so I turned sharp and the mic stand went through the middle of the ESL63. So that was dodgy. I mean, Tony Faulkner uses them now on his sessions, and not my ones, the one he's got. And they sound brilliant. They really do. You know, I'm so impressed with the sounds he gets playing them back on the quads. But there's a problem with the quad. It's got the rear output, and rooms like mine are not big enough to handle it, you know. So in a decent place, properly treated, you're well away, in my view. And there's an accuracy to the sourcing of the frequencies. They're all centre-sourced. And I always love speakers with coincident cones, or at least with them vertical one above the other. When they're spread sideways, in my view, the imaging is not there, you know, that I like. So here was I venturing into many different mid and side rigs. And what did I do? Let me read this to see if I get it right. Initially, I was using a Ribbon STC, now Coles 4038. But I damaged a number of those by booming too fast, because a figure of eight Ribbon is the most insensitive thing being moved, and I wrecked a couple of those, so I didn't proceed with that. And I even used the JVC Electret many years ago on the same rig to produce the results I was looking for. And I have a rig here that allows me to show it to you, but I can't find it. So, powers are stuff here. I'll probably find it later.
Probably sold it while you wait.
Yeah, could be. Yes, good point. Anyway, moving on. Then the Sennheiser MKH4030 came along, and then, of course, when Biden bought a number of those, and John Willett knows that because he worked for Sennheiser, and it's a lovely rig. The windshielding isn't that brilliant because the latest way of doing things is the Lyra system, and that is so very good. But you also need to make sure the cable doesn't bring up the what's-it noises because these cables are not the special ones they find, which do reduce the amount of transmission through the cable. But what do I do on a mic stand on a floor that's vibrating from the sounds being produced and people thumping their feet? I use under my mic stands foam. And the leg stands on it, and three or four, depending on my legs on the stand. And that really, really works to stop them, because the mass of the stand does not transmit anything once it's on a piece of rubber. In a church with a solid floor, you've no worry, you know, I just put it on a solid floor. But I've never had any trouble with them, except I had to cover these with this because the cameraman was so upset to see something yellow, you know. I haven't got a television. And then I went Shoaip's, and I do love Shoaip's. And somewhere here, if I brought it, is the ones I use now. I haven't brought it, would you believe? Which is the CCM Tiny, CCM 22. It's, how do they describe it? I think it's a wide omni, and a wide cardioid, and they're figure of eight, which is the CCM 8. And the rig is so small, and I'm sorry I didn't bring one. I've got two of them, and it's a blooming shame I haven't packed it. That's disgusting. Anybody else use Sennheisers? Because I think they're very nice. I did use the CCM4 ordinary cardioid and the CCM21 initially, and then I went the 22, and I seem to like that. It's the latest version. There is a microphone, which I don't know if everyone knows about these. I forget where they're made, but they're Pearl mics, and they've got rectangular capsules, four of them, one, two, three, four. And I think the sound of these has got something to offer. It's got a ribbon-type sound, I've always thought. It's a smoothness. Now, I'm told that there's not a single resonance due to the two dimensions there are in the thing, rather than a circular diaphragm, which may have a more pronounced singular resonance. I don't know if that's true. I just use things. But guess what? There's a mic clip for it, and I put this tape round here because the first day I used it, the cable was on the end of it, it was on the stand, and I loosened the knob, and this fell, and I managed to catch it before it went too far, because they didn't think that they needed something to hold that apart from the tightening of the nuts. Oh, you learn. It's a lovely mic. I mean, don't blow into it. Some people are daft enough to blow into a mic, but you may want to look at that closely. The funny thing about it is the light is on the side of one of the things, so you can't use it to line it up, although it's 4XY as well as M&S. But I use it M&S because, what do? I take the two cardioids sideways, make them into a figure of eight, and off you go, you know. I expect you know all about that, so there's no point in talking about it. Just to talk about Sennheiser again, I have got this rig here, which has got this fancy device on the back, which you may want to look at if I pass one of these round, because you can boom from either side, the left, right, and front to back. It's marvellous how you can go back from where the stand is to get it more distance from the players, where you're restricted, where you can put the legs. And that really works. I don't know who invented it, but I had a couple of dozen made, or half a dozen made, or whatever it was, and used it a lot of times. But I've never seen it on sale anywhere. Not that I'm trying to sell it. Right, what have we got here? We've got the MKH 800 twin. Thank you, John. 800 twin. It's got a cardioid forward and a cardioid back. So obviously, when I get to the surround business, we will talk about its use. And then there's the figure of eight there, the MKH-30-40. And the MKH-30. And bear in mind that when you work M&S, you want the phase of this side to be the same as the mid-mic. That's something you do to avoid left and right reversals when you're decoding. And on top here, for other reasons, there's an MKH-80 variable polar pattern. So you can have that there and have a variable polar pattern mid if you wish to chase that business without this thing on the top. Get rid of that and put that one in there. So that's what I do with that. You may want to look at it. I don't know. But when we get to the surround bit, we'll see what that can do. I've still got these lovely Bayer ribbons. And I use them on percussion usually because there's something about the ribbon and its ability to break a cup. Almost. and, you know, I love these, but, you know, you can't use them on vocals, in my view. People don't blow into them. It's disgusting, you know, if you do that. And again, I've got one of these fittings so you can boom from front, back, side to side, although it's dodgy if you're doing it with a lot of weight on the mic and you've got the thing to the side, because if you go this side, guess what? The weight of it might undo the nut, you know, and that is where it has let me down on occasion, so you've got to be careful of that.
Get any top out of those, mate?
Say again?
Do you get any top out of those in your high frequencies?
I think you do.
Because I bought a couple and they were so hopeless I've never used them.
Well, all right.
Five dB below their spec of 15.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Well, I liked them on percussion, curiously. I thought that transients were working. We're talking here about classical music. Over the back of the orchestra or something, or ensembles.
How old are they, as a matter of fact?
Oh, gosh, they must be 15, 20 years.
Oh, that's probably where they're good.
All right. Well, good point.
Cheer with age.
Made in Germany.
Right, well, that's all the mid and side lot, because I do, of course, do a lot of outside recordings. Aircraft, steam trains. I did 4 CDs of steam trains, and they don't sell because there's no pictures. You know, they want to see the... And in the latter years, in the 1990s when I was doing them, there was more and more cameramen around, and there was I putting my mics where I wanted it and holding it, and I was yelled at many times, you know, for being in their shots, so I gave it up. There was no point. Well, anyway, we've seen the dummy head with the DPA 4006s, and it says here there's a dummy head with a DPA 4060s with a rear-mounted Olympus recorder. So look at that for transportability. You end up with these tiny, beautiful, small DPAs, and would you believe it, that's the only ear I kiss these days. It was given to me by the National Physical Laboratory, actually. I can't remember the professor's name, but he gave it to me, and I stuck the mics in there. So by all means, if these things are reaching the back of the room, carry on. And of course, the LS10 is in view while you're holding it. In the past, when I did the steam trains, I had the DPA, the Tascam, and you had to keep looking down for the levels. And of course, you can move this, but that way you've got complete control over both at the same time. Although they're very difficult to change the level, but it does work quite easily. Now, what would you do with these things? I got rid of the mini jacks that were on them because I need, you know, some reliability where you plug in. And I put an LS10 in this box. Oops. I put an LS10 in here, but they're all in use on something else. So you can imagine then that, what do you do with those? Any ideas? That's it. Yep. And how do you do that? Well, you've got to be careful. Red is right, and this one's, the foam's gone. I must get some more. And the blue's on the left. And I go around the back of the ear and then shove it in. Because that way you've got something that you were given at birth which stops them falling out, you know. And it works well. I've done a number of concerts where I couldn't put the stand up and sat in the front row. And the great thing about it is, one of the concerts had a quartet, I think, and then the piano was over there for a solo item. So how do you get the piano recording?
You look at it.
Turn your head. You know, it's the most efficient mic stand in the world.
Don't pick up.
Maybe.
Until somebody coughs and you turn your head to tell them off.
Yeah.
Is that the ultimate dummy head?
Well, it's not... Well, I thought it was a human head, but never mind.
May I mention at this point that Mike sat absolutely stationary at my father's funeral.
I did turn my head for that piano, dear boy. What? I think I did. I didn't want to mention that, but you're quite right, that's where it happened.
Does it pick up much of your breathing?
Well, hopefully you don't get heavy that night, but, you know. well, I don't think so. I mean,
basically, what I'm saying is if you just sit there quietly recording something, do you get away with it?
I think you do. And, of course, being omnis, you don't get any bone conduction noises. And somebody said, well, why can't you put headphones on as well? Oh, God, come on. You can't do that bit. So these are made by Soundman in Germany, and there is a company in England that sells them up in the north of England called DACS, DAX, and they're still selling them, and I must get some new foam because they have deteriorated. However, there's another version I made way back in the 80s, I think it's, what, no, 90s probably. That was a realistic from Maplin headphones, and I left the same wires in for the headphones that were on it. Cut the headphones off, which are there, and you end up with a wonderful system for putting them almost in your ears, you know, and going around with that box of mine and plugged in. And I give the impression when I'm doing recordings that shouldn't be doing that I'm actually listening to the music, you see. But you're not. You're actually recording it. Well, true. And this should I have done this. There was a pianist who I've recorded many times, and he came to the Wavendon Theatre and says, Mike, I'd like you to record it, but he cancelled it 2 days beforehand. He said, I've got your tickets, you can come and listen and see it. So I sat at the side and I used this. And I stupidly played them back to some members of the audience. And the management noticed. And they went bonkers. But then I said, I'm supposed to be there anyway. And I'd only just got the LS10s then. And would you believe it, they said, can you rub it out? I said, no, I don't know how to do that yet. And we didn't use it for any purpose. It's just that it upset them, you know, the poor devils. Ah. Does anybody know what people in the Wildlife Sound Recording Society use? Often they use a parabolic reflector. And again, the LS10 in the back. And inside there's two Olympus conference mics, they call them, and I bought them, and they sound very good, actually. And what did I do with them? I'll pass this round. Oh, that's probably too dodgy to pass around. You can look at it later. There's the Olympus mics. Two of them, either side of I can't stand mono. Let's get some stereo by having a baffle in the middle. It's not my idea. It's happened on a number of people have done it. And you have to be focused with this particular parabolic, dead in line with the edge here. There are other parabolic shapes which cause differences. And you do get some stereo effect, but distance pickup, you know. There's a theory to it. But what I did one day was I treated them as, made them a figure of eight, so I summed them together for mid, and then I thought, well, let's make them a figure of eight by inverting the phase of one. And then I, having done that, I then decoded it, M&S, and I got, I'm sure, and I can't remember what I was recording, but it was, I think it was an animal, you know, a sheep barking in a field, or don't bark, do they? Whatever they do. And lo and behold, I have headphone feed at the time, when I got home, where I heard it so distant, something you can't do with binaural. I didn't say this earlier, but binaural falls apart when it comes to the front imaging. It really does, in my view, except if you play it back in the same room. When you've got the same room, you'll hear it almost exactly what you heard on the time to a degree on directionality. Anyway, there's something that you might want to look at later. The Wildlife Sound Recording Society people are marvellous chaps. They get some fantastic results in using this sort of thing and shotguns and everything else. Any thoughts on parabolic reflectors?
Is there any reason not to go up to more capsules? So you've got two there. Would you go up to put a sound field in the mic in the middle of that?
Well, it's a thought, but yeah. Well, I mean, ideally, they're designed to have one mic dead in the sweet, you know, their accurate pickup spot with all the reflections collected and thrown at it. That's what the idea is. And I've never studied it beyond just used it now and again, you know.
As long as you don't do what a friend of mine once did. Very first time he used his stereo parabolic, and he said, it's wonderful, he said. A bird was that tree, 50 yards that, flew into the air, singing and singing all the way through, and landed on the tree 50 yards that side. And out of force of habit,
You followed it across the
world. Exactly, exactly.
In the end, he made the stereo by panning it and adding a stereo image of a stream.
Lovely idea. That, I've known somebody else do that, yeah.
Are those PZMs on there, those conference mics? Or are they?
No. They're little mics for, used at meetings, you see. I mean,
you made them.
Yeah, that's it. You spotted it. I mean, I don't want to pass this around. I think it's too dodgy for passing between people's heads, you know. I mean, you'll hit your head on it. Yeah, I should have said that, but then you can see that it's a... I didn't like the flat surface. Another thing with me, I feel you want to distribute the collection of the sound by reflection. You know, you bring it in and, I don't know, just a theory.
Do you get much bass out of it?
These aren't too bad in that area, but you don't really want it.
No, but
you
know, I was just wondering.
Not for birdsong. They
should roll off quite.
They're squawking quite high frequencies, you know, most of them.
If you're on a moon subject, do you get a sort of phasing azimuth effect as it crosses?
I haven't been with this. I mean, I belong to the Wildlife Sound Record Society. They're fantastic people, and would you believe it, I've never done any. And we're working together now to go and see them do something and take the things along, especially what's in that end box, for an idea I've got on the go, you know. So this is what the life's all about. Keep doing it. Oops. These are very effective. And... No, I won't put it on. All my DIY stuff. I mean, I just do it because I used to be in the telephone business teaching apprentices in Bletchley Park, would you believe? And we used to build relay sets, you know, and things, and that's what this is like. In fact, while I'm talking about that, you may as well, if you want to, pass this around and you can see the ancient way it's wired, if you wish to. All the boards plug in. We've got SSM 2019s, I think now, it used to be 2017, for the mics, two in one board. And then the 5532 chips are used for virtual earth circuits. Everything's a virtual earth circuit. But here we've got a talkback, and the power for the talkback amplifier there is only on when you press the button. In other words, they can't accuse you of actually having a click from it, but there we are, I'm talking to you now. And, you know, I wire them like this, would you believe, these talkbacks. Just a bit of wire. You don't need mains at the other end with an amplifier, because you can get enough out of that small amplifier there to drive that length of cable. I think every preamp for people recording should have at least two outputs. You know, most of them have only got one, I believe, you know, and you've got to have a backup recorder and you've got two outputs. That's one of the things I do in mine anyway. What else do I do? Linear faders. You know, I just don't like the idea of moving. In other words, I'm getting 6 dB halfway up, more or less, to go, you know, and it's easy to do the controls on a classical concert when things are getting louder. You can bring them down so slowly because they're linear faders, that's my view. And the other thing I have with them, they are parallel tracked, each fader. It's a stereo fader, and I parallel them. So the reliability is enormously increased from the point of view of dust and things falling in them, you know. It's pretty well immune from it because I keep the lid shut mainly. But, you know, having the tracks in parallel, the 10K fader, so you end up with a 5K fader, but that don't matter. Oh, a lineup tone. I mean, I think it's essential that you get the correct ratio between the headroom and the noise floor of the system to the recorder that's digital. So minus 12 is a sensible place to set the oscillator to, and this one doesn't have a permanent, it doesn't have a button that I sometimes once thought, what's that button for? And produced a tone on the feed, which you can only do when you push that plug in that hole, you know. And this thing is an interesting bit of kit, and there's somebody in the room who's got one. Anybody else got one? Ah, oh, John, and you, sir, yeah. What's your thoughts about it?
I'm just totally sold the RTW now. I mean, that's just sitting in the garage somewhere, so...
Oh. What about yours, sir?
I always use mine.
You use yours?
Me?
Yeah.
Sitting on the desk at home, gets used every day.
Good for you. What's your views about it?
Marvellous.
Yep, and, of course...
Fabulous.
Fabulous.
I've... one way round, one the other way around.
So oh, yes, you can do that, yeah.
Front and rear as well.
The trouble was, it was it's been totally ignored by the world, the manufacturing world. The guy who invented it was Frank Fox. He brought it to my house in the 1980s, would you believe? And it was a green thing, and I said, oh, when he took his dog for a walk. When he came back, I suggested the idea of red up the middle, red, orange, and yellow. It's not usable really as a level meter, you know, but it just gives you some idea what's going on. You've got to have the proper peak showing on something decent. But it's a brilliant system, there's no doubt about that. And I will be able to play something or not play something on it, use it in a moment. We may as well do this now. MNS decoding, what do you have? You have the mid mic up the middle. And you don't pan it, you can pan it. And it shows the panning anyways, so you'd expect it to do, so we don't bother with that. Bum bum bum, that's the mid mic. And the side mic has to be out of phase to both channels, out of phase. And there it is, out of phase. And you can detect that it's not as much of a signal there until I get to the side of the side mic. And the two together are mixed in a ratio that gives you stereo. And there we are, we're able now to get a stereo slightly left on that side and slightly right on that side. And away we go, you know. I think it's so brilliant at explaining to you what's going on. And the other factors are, you don't necessarily listen to everything, but at least you've got your eye on that most of the time and seeing if something's gone wrong. Well, you're still in trouble if it has. But I think it's a brilliant system. It's showing a lot of handling noise on these mics, of course. Any thoughts on that? Somebody still makes it in Milton Keynes, actually. Tabor Audio, if you're that keen to find out. And Frank, Philip Stokes, a colleague of mine, he used to make it in the interim stage. So, and the new one is called Box 2, but it should really be Box 3 because the second one was a development of this one physically. It was made smaller and so on. Any thoughts?
What's it called?
The Box. That's what Frank Fox called it. It's the Frank Fox The Box. And the name still carries on, and we try to keep his name mentioned. He passed away. But he went around the world to shows trying to sell it. It was an idea, and it just did not come off, which is intriguing. I have more than one headphone feed on my systems, because come on, you've got a producer coming in and maybe the lead artist to listen at the same time as you, or you can at least use three headphones on this one, all with a virtual earth circuit driving them. The 5532, it drives three of the phones I use, which are Sennheisers, the HD600s, or now the 700s, which I love, the new ones, lovely. So there's that, and a mono button on the headphone feed doesn't interfere with anything else, but you know exactly where you are if your headphones are playing up or you want to check that you've got a dead center image on your headphones. And the same if you've got a loudspeaker feed from the machine. You'll have a gain control on it, obviously, and a mono button on that. And that's what we do, you know. It's a brilliant thing to be able to have. And if you've got a playback listening facility, you can listen to this one by throwing that and having a switch here which points at that. And if you've got an external one coming into a special socket on the back, you can throw it that way and listen to what the other recorder's doing at the time or as a playback system. And of course, you know the talkback exists. So this is only the amplifier is only powered when you press that button. And you heard it earlier. Take 42. Any thoughts on that? Because there's so much kit that doesn't have those facilities. I don't know if you agree. Mm-hmm. Yep, right. That's page 3. Jolly good. Well, we're going to move on to the surround, because that's what I'm playing around with. Before we do, any thoughts on what we said so far?
These little Olympus jobbies that you put in all your kit, do they provide phantom power to the mic?
Oh, no. None of that goes on. All they've got is plug-in power for unbalanced feeds, which you can only use short. Hence, in that thing, it's plug-in power that's feeding those mics. You know, the parabolic reflector, they're unbalanced electrodes.
It's much to expect, but it would be great.
The slightly bigger LS100 has phantom.
Yes, I believe that's the case, yeah. Yeah, I've not followed it up. The trouble with this game is you buy something and a few months or years later, it's out of date. They don't make the LS10 anymore, but something similar. But we've all been through that, you know, where you buy something in a particular year, and especially with computers, you know.
So do they just record WAV files onto SD cards?
Oh, they do. I mean, I love them. Those LS10s are fantastic. But there's other machines, as you know, other makes, apart from... other. Who's got an SD card recorder? Well, it should... yeah. Oh, it's the one there. What's that one?
That's a Zoom.
Oh, yes, that's a lower-cost version.
Just, it's only designed for your voice, Mike.
I mean, it doesn't work in silence, does it? Anyway, if there's no more on stereo, let's think about why I went into this surround business. I do favour the ITU layout, which has got a circle of five speakers, and you end up with the front ones being 30 degrees either side of the centre and 110. And I think that's a good idea. In my house, it fits in beautifully because there's a sofa where we sit on, and you get three people on that if necessary. But there's only one real sweet spot. That's dead in the centre of that circle. And anybody else operate in 5.0, as I call it? There's no future in it, but at least if you've done it, you've explored it. And that's what do you do, sir, at the back?
Well, I have 5.0, but I tend to have varies the layout.
Yeah.
Compared to more...
Do you record for it, or do you just listen to established CD, DVDs?
Normally, yeah, pan-modded mixed.
All right.
Or from ambisonics.
All right, that's fine. The thing is, it's essential that you get the level output from all these speakers at the same level from a single source, you know, that's essential. You can guide it a lot by using a voice, getting a recording of a voice and switching it to every one that you've got. And you can judge it that way. But there are little, Neutrik, I think, have got some, another company, have got an oscillator with all sorts of, pure tone and pink tone and pink noise and all the rest of it. And I've used it and it's fine. And they must be in phase. There must be a number of people who have got stereo out of phase, let alone five speakers out of phase. So it's essential that those are kept. And of course, if you can keep it away from the walls and room corners and have a symmetrical room of reflections, you're well away. I've got currently the KH300s for the front two. The K and H, 110s for the centre and the two rears. And for the surround, I've got four on the ceiling. So we'll come to that a bit later. The playback control, it's all homemade stuff again, and this is version 2, and it needs altering again. So what do I do with it? I can vary the width of the front because I go for a system where you can go to mono, or, you know, it's called sum and difference. You go for sum and difference and then decode it, M&S, and it's handy, even with a dummy head recording, because you feel you're stretching something. And if I had this the right way up... it's getting worse. Because I thought, we've got to have the front at the front, but it's green, you see, so fine. Well, that's the centre, the front pair. The rear pair are there, and the centre pair's there. So what do I do also? There are a number of times when I want to record on four channels the decoded WXYZ feeds I'm using on occasions, and I don't need to record with four channels, the centre channel, because you can create it from those two, because you're getting rid of the side mic and using the mid mic perfectly. So you can do it that way. The height. Right, I've got speakers. Let's talk about 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5. I've got one there and one there, and one there and one there in height. And the idea behind that is to try and emulate the periphery that Michael Gerson was involved with in the 50s and even earlier, or whenever it was, 60s and 50s. So this is the feeds for the height front to back, and this is the side to side. It had to be added that way because it was added to the box afterwards, you know. And the other thing you need to be able to do is to put a test tone in it from one of the sources at the front here, and you can press and feed any speaker in the room immediately to judge the levels, you know. It pays to do that. And you can trim the left and rights over here on any of the pairs. because this is just the width of them, you know. So I do that. I don't know where else it's leading me, but that's what we do. And then we have another box with balanced feeds to the speakers, because they're all amplified or active speakers with amplifiers in. And it works very well. And John Willett will tell you something about it. Go on. You said something. Because what I do is give the listener, even my neighbour, she was flabbergasted, we give her this thing, and you can switch off the height, the rear, the centre, or go to stereo instantly. And then what happens, John?
Well, when you go from go back down to even five, going from your with height back to 5.1, it sounds so flat in comparison.
Yeah.
But the danger of me talking about this is that everybody's going to now turn up in your house to listen to it, because it really does sound good.
It does work. I mean, there's no future in it economically or anything in the world at all, but it's been achieved, and to be honest, I don't bother with it anymore. I just have used so many different mics to do it, as we'll now hear. I've got relays inside the other one of the boxes feeding the speakers, so I can... And I was surprised they didn't produce a click when you operated the relay. That was a big thrill to discover I could switch the channels and you couldn't hear it at all, the switching. Any other thoughts? Because the jellyfish, in my view, is absolutely essential if you're going to do surround. It gives you a picture like this thing does of the stereo, and I don't know how much they've sold of those, but I bought it because it's so marvellous in my view. Now, one of the mics I've got, and I don't like it anymore because it's not really big enough. Now, why is it so small? I had some windshields with ladies' tights, and I had to make it that size to fit in them. But now I've done something different, as you'll see later. And the original one I made was bigger, and it worked a darn sight better. So what do we have with this device? If you've got a tone on it, you'll get a circle. And there's the bar graphs for left and right blue, centre green, white rears, and the LFE channel, because they have to provide that as part of the system, don't they? Can you see? Sorry, I'm in your way, really. I should be standing a bit further around. So let's now look at the centre channel. Here's the centre channel, and she's coming through. Let's look at the front left is there. There's the front left, and then the front right, and we end up with something like that. But when the rears are up, we will end up with the rears coming through, probably the similar, if I can get them to come up. Oh, that's this one and this one. It's not that one. I don't label my equipment, you see. And the trouble is, you'd be surprised how difficult it is to work on occasions. Now, just to try and show you something, I believe that in a decent surround recording, and would you all talk loudly? Do it again. Yeah, you generally see the circle wobbling around, and it really does indicate that you've got it working correctly, in my view. And it's surprising. I know these are omnis in here, and you're getting reflections off the wall, but in cathedrals and anywhere, you really... I do feel you do get the similar levels. Bear in mind, the human head is receiving the same human levels, but bear in mind, your ears are more directional forward, you know. I don't think you... And it works. I believe it's a vital thing to have, is that device. For all the
I might have missed it, but what is in that tight-wrapped box that you've got there?
That's the dummy head. There's five Schweppes.
Right.
CCM2s, omnis.
Based by some sort of... spaced.
Yeah, well, there's two there. I suppose I could unplug it without wrecking my phantom and passing it around. Let's do that. Because I have no protection on the front ends for the... surges, I should do, but I don't like diodes in the circuit. Whoops, that's me. So the easiest way, here's the easiest way to do it. Unplug that. Mm. Pass it to you first, then you can...
Can we see inside of there? Or is it just sort of out there?
The flush mounted. It's just an extension of my idea for the dummy head. I want these to see the centre soundstage. Again, the old business that I just believe in.
So they're omnis and not spaced?
Yes, they're omnis. Yeah. And, you know, the it's the phase aspect, but when it's slightly bigger, it's a better job. The previous one I put in the bin. No, I mean, I just feel you get a better surround result by having it slightly bigger than that, as you'll see in a minute.
So each microphone feeds one speaker.
Yes, that's the big thing. You are getting that with no decoding, going straight to the speakers. And there is a commercial one called the holophone. The holophone. And I don't, shouldn't I say this, but somebody at Sky said they call it the horophone. Perhaps I shouldn't have said that. Right. Whoops. Thanks, man.
Perhaps if you use directional microphones, cardioids, instead of...
Well, you couldn't put it in a head of any sort because the body would be reflecting stuff into it and you'd be blocking the rear pickup from sliding it in. An Omni is the only way to do that. It's the dummy head approach, you know. Who was it who asked that question? Yeah. Oh, I thought it was.
So you get the directionality through as a result of the head, shielding, shadowing the...
Yeah. I mean, I know I was close to it there, and you could see it affecting it, you know. And it gives as good a result in surround as I've had with other mics, seriously. Staggering. In fact, while I think of it, with the Omnis, you're going to get a bottom end better, probably, than some of the other mics I use, but not always. And when I was switching the switch off and on, somebody thought, oh, when I went from stereo, from surround to stereo... Whichever way you do it, can't remember how you do it. Well, it don't matter. I've gone from surround to stereo. The bass was better in the surround. And my room isn't that big, and it's a timber-framed house with bricks on the outside and panels on the inside. But the bass was entirely different in surround. And I suggested to this person that it was the standing wave we were reproducing from the church, you know, maybe. Just a thought of mine. And it's definitely there when you're in surround, and the speakers are not as big as the main one, so we're not altering that. He thought I was switching my sub off, but I wasn't, you know.
I suppose bass is more mono, your lower bass, but if you've got five speakers,
that's a thought,
five woofers all moving at the same
time. That's a good point.
You've got a lot more air being moved than only just two woofers.
That's a very good point you make. However, you know, not that I've got woofers in the speakers on the ceiling. The ceiling would fall down. Yeah, good point, John. Back to the notes to make sure I do the right things. What's the time? We're nearly there. I'll tell you what, though. I feel happy having a coincident or near coincident set of mics for surround. I really do. On the grounds that the speakers are sending it back to what you would hear if you were there, because we're quite coincident with what we were given when we were born. And lo and behold, I feel that that's the way to record surround, is with a near coincident rig, rather than maybe putting two other mics on a deck of tree at the back. You know, it has been done that way, but I've never compared it, so I don't know. I just feel it's better that the speakers send it back to a coincident thing, created from a coincident thing, you know. That's my thoughts. Surround mic rigs. Here we go. Well, obviously, the sound field's at the base of it. When you've got WXYZ, you can go anywhere with it, can't you? You can do periphery and everything by decoding from the stereo that you were doing. So there's no problem with that. I've got a number of WXYZ recordings, which we have decoded, and it works very well. However, there is a company, I can't remember the name, who have done this because they were unhappy with the sound field they were using. So I decided to copy it. What have I got here? A DPA 4006 TL, that's transformerless. And it's got the same outputs, more or less, as these Sennheisers, which are always higher than most people's mics. You know, the Shure's are quite low. And what do we have then? An Omni in the middle, a figure of eight front to back, and a figure of eight side to side. So we have got W, X and Y. I have tried a Z here, but I was unhappy with the idea of it blocking the pickup from that and all the rest of it, you know. In other words, I didn't, when I say a Z, a figure of eight up and down, and I tried that. I never bothered with it. But for surround, how do you do? You obviously decode M and S. Oh, well, first of all, you've got to make a cardioid forward, which you do by adding that to that. And you invert the phase of this and add it to the cardioid, to the omni, and you end up with a cardioid backwards. So you've got a cardioid forward, cardioid back, and you decode it, and the cardioid you made goes to the centre channel. That's simple, isn't it? You know, it's very much related to the mics. One of my arguments that the mics and where you use them should relate to where the speakers are. Anyway, that's a system that there is a well-known company uses. And I've used it once or twice. I can't remember what label it was.
Nimbus.
That's Nimbus, yeah. Thank you. I'd forgotten.
The Halliday microphone.
Yeah. Who's got the Pearl mic? Who's got the Pearl mic?
You've had that.
Yes, ah. Thank you, my boy. I thought it'd been put in the bin. So I've used this for surround because, again, look, what have you got? You can M&S for the front and rear with that. Use the cardioid for the front and the cardioid for the rear for the decoding of the rear and decoding of the front. And the front capsule here is forward so that you end up with the centre channel. So, you know, that works very well. And, of course, you can record it on four channels because when you try to go to height, you need at least eight, you know. So there's that.
Right, let's ask you a question.
Yeah.
Why do you persist with this channel instead of MS? You're still actually making that centre channel.
Well, I think you've got to.
Does it pull the focus in?
Well, I think it.
A lot going on.
Yeah, I think, in all honesty, in a concert situation, your sweet spot's a bit wider if you're running the centre channel. And I just feel that because, you know, you go off axis and there's one speaker. I just feel you've got to follow the rules of running it, you know. I know it's for dialogue in film and television. I realise that's a different thing. But I think we must, if the public ever get their hands on it, they'll need to hear that front channel, otherwise they'll go bonkers. Exactly. Yeah. Thanks for that thought.
Shiny black plastic.
Microphones wander, don't they? Have you noticed that? Where's it gone?
I hope you're counting the ones you send out.
I know.
Yeah, I think.
back in again.
Yeah, I think you'll find that. I'm looking for the collection of Sennheisers. Oh, there she is. Thank you. Very kind.
Do you ever clean your capsules, may I ask?
Well, I have had trouble with the DPAs, and you've got to be so gentle, haven't you? What do you do?
Cooking?
Yeah.
I was told by.
With what?
Oh, it's a secret. Distilled water.
Oh, come on.
Cowrick
always used to clean it ultrasonically. You sent it back for repair.
Did they really? Oh, lovely.
They had 600 series Cowricks. Remember, I had some. But you clear the top floor. When you sent them back, I think there was an ultrasonic cleaner they put them into.
That's interesting, that, because, you know, I.
It's amazing how dirty they get,
yeah.
I can tell you.
Very good point, yes, yeah. I'd agree with you there.
Your Sennheiser's one, though, so much.
I don't know.
Because it's an RF condenser. An AF condenser would attract dust, to the RF.
Yeah, these are RF.
They're no tight.
Unique. Except somebody's copied it, haven't they? I believe. Mm. Well, anyway, going back to surround again, if you're using this double thing, the 800 twin, you can obviously use this to do the side, and this to do the front and back, and you've got a cardioid for the front. And for height, I need a cardioid up. So when we get to the height business, this is the cardioid upwards for height, because all you need is a cardioid up and some double decoding to do the height. Well, we'll get to that in a minute. Does anyone recognise what the bottom half of that is? The bottom half. Forget the top.
It's a very
DPA 5100. And what's it got? It's got 4060s, I believe, buried in it, right at the back, with interference tubes for the front three. So there's an interference tube for the centre, one for there, and one for there. That's what I'm told it is. You can't take it to bits because it's stitched up, you know. You've been stitched up when you buy it. And this is an extra windshield that they supply, which I love. And you end up with two flush-mounted 4060s at the back. And it works very well. It's very, very good. And, you know, the directionality is there. And they're coincident in the end because they're right close together, apparently. I've never looked to see. I don't want to destroy it to see. But what do I do when I want height? Because we may as well talk about that now. I end up with Here we go. When I undo this, it's all DIY stuff, you see. There we are. So you can look at the top. I've only got 8 channels, so with these 5, there's only 3 available for the surround. But may as well tell you, what do I do with the height rear? I sum these 2 together and feed them to the rear speaker behind me in height. You know, if you've taken that on board, that's what I do. Let's undo that. And you, what else is joined up there? Everything. Pass it round, sir. Oh, it's gone through the middle of that. Look, oh, they've got hooked. Why do hooks hook? Thank you. So we got as far as the height on that, but there's good reason. There's another pile of mics, though.
Sure, we looked quizzing.
They're Omnis at the top. Yep, Omnis at the top.
That's different from that one.
I think it's the colour. They do a pink one for some artists, so to hide them when they're on their face, you see, apparently. I've not heard any difference, but I stuck it in the middle just in case. Yeah, DPA 4060s. Why they chose the same set of numbers as, you know, with a different order than the 4006, I've no idea, but it throws you completely often. But I've got to mention all the manufacturers. Shoips. They're side-fire cardioids. If I pass it round, you'll see that there's a cardioid facing that way, a cardioid facing that way, one to the front, one to the side here, one to the side there, and one to the rear. So you can obviously decode it like you can the Pearl. And it works. But for height, you can add this one to get a decoding sideways above and a sideways and a front to back, because you use the same pairs of figure of eights you've created to do that. And that works. I know there's long wires on this, but...
What's in the middle, Mike? Is it normally?
Say again?
What's in the middle?
Oh, that is the CCM4, which is the normal cardioid.
Right.
Firing upwards. You've got it. These are beautifully made, and they fire sideways when they don't move in the holding. Well, nobody's going to twist these around, are they? They're just going to watch it.
Have you taken the Omni off that? Because you used to have an Omni on that.
Oh, yes. Well, they're a bit low in bottom end, the old Shoips lot, for good reason. And I did have an Omni below to filter with their own filter. They've got a filter which they supply. I can't remember what frequency it goes down to. Removes high frequencies below above 100, I believe, and you can feed that in and get a bit of the bottom end if you feel it's missing in an organ recording or something. So that's what I did. Yeah, John remembers that. I don't. I used to clip it on there. I clipped the Omni there. Yeah. Anyway, surrounded with height. Let's talk about that, shall we? Please. I believe it's going to be a good idea to imitate the periphery if you're doing it in a high-quality sound situation. Forget film and television, where you've got thousands of people in a big venue, and I've heard some of the surround. Anybody heard any decent surround in cinemas? I was unhappy when I heard them. I heard voices coming from a box on the side, you know, it didn't seem to work to me. So I think what we've got to do is imitate the jolly old Michael Gerzen approach of periphery. But look, you can't have speakers on the floor in the house. My sofa's behind me, you know, and all that. You can't do it. In a research establishment, yes, you could have 4 that way, 4 that way, and 4 that way. That's 12. And you could have a speaker in the middle of each of the decoded pairs, making it 18, maybe. So it's not practical. But I can do it with 5 if you're working with the center channel, which I like to keep. And how do we get it? Well, I think you've heard it said, most of it. What do I say about it? Well, the Soundfield does it, and the other ones are the Shoips cluster and the Sennheiser collection, which we showed before, and it is here. So obviously, if you've seen this already, you'll know this gives you the height, and you decode it as follows. You make that a figure of 8 for the forward and back, and you've got a figure of 8 for the side to side. I know it's spaced, but you've got problems with that, whatever you do, you know, physical layout is the problem. And that works ever so well, really does.
The whole up there is recorded on the 4 channels.
Indeed. Yes, yes, you could do it all on four channels. No. That's a double cardioid.
Yeah, twin.
Yeah.
And the other's a single microphone, aren't they? So you've got four channels.
That's true. Thank you, John. I'm too old. And you know, the brain doesn't always work, dear boy. So, yes, you're quite right. That's one great advantage. And then you decode it on playback. That's it.
Boop. How do you get the height with five speakers?
Well, no, I've talked about two more, haven't I? Four more. Right. One there, and one there, and one there. Imitating what Gerson did above the head height, you know. And he did the same on the floor. And it's not practical. But it really works, as John and I found out.
The last time I was excited by surround demonstration was of the paraphonic sound, since when all the other surround things are boring.
Right. Well done. If you've heard the true periphony. I went up to the people who were doing it for Calrec years ago, and that day his amplifiers blew up. So I never heard it, you know. I forget his name. It was...
Keith Ming?
No, it wasn't Keith Ming. He was after Calrec, you know. When Calrec moved on... to doing mixers and everything, I think. Smith, I think his name, I'm not sure. One of the bosses of Calrec.
Michael, it's Howard Smith.
Howard Smith, that's Howard, yeah. That's it. Anyway, what else can I do? Omnis for height capture. Well, you saw the, already said, the 5100 with the three mics on top, but I have now moved on to what I call a heavy monster, and that is heavy. And what have we got? We've got small windshielding. And on the roof, we've got three, obviously, imitating what I did with the 5100. So you've got three here, in theory. And what do you end up with? They're mounted like I did with the 5100 extra, three mics. And what mics am I using? Let's pass it around while I... take the trouble to...
So you follow your postman down the street to collect the rubber bands?
Yeah. I tried to get Royal Mail to have black rubber bands in the street, and they're all red. Anyway, the mics you see in there are supplied by a guy who belongs to the Wildlife Sound Recording Society, Ian Brady, and he's putting the leads on them, which comes to a jack plug, because they're a plug-in power, but he also makes, and I've copied it now with plug-in boards, to do it via a phantom feed, so it comes along phantom and gets converted to the volts needed. And that works very well, and I'm still working on it, but it'll be available for someone to try out sometime, I hope. But the capsules are in those heads there, and the ones I had here I can't find. Boop, boop. Oh, here they are.
So are we still talking about one microphone to each speaker?
Yes. No, not with all these omnis. You're stuck with matrixing with the other systems, but these are omnis. And that's the omnis, and I hate to say this. If you compare these with the 4006, they're so, so similar. And that head with all those... the other head. If I had... Shoips in there, you'd probably be £8,000 or more, wouldn't you? These, you can probably get eight of these for around about £500 or £400. I don't know the name. They're made in Germany, and I don't know whether he mounts them in this holding, but the great thing about it is they're tapered, and that's a total accident, and when you make the head, you can push them in until they jam tight, you know, if you foul the head properly. So you may as well look at those. Any thoughts? Because the last point's coming up, and we're dead on time. Any thoughts?
Well, we couldn't buy those easily then.
Sorry?
We couldn't buy those capsules easily.
Yes. Yeah, I don't want to publicise him too much, but he's got another job, but he's happy to be contacted. Ian Brady, his name is, and up in Lancashire. And you can always, I don't know what he wants to do about getting known about it, but he supplies his friends in the society, and I just feel that there's a great asset. They're so, the quality is amazingly good. This is my last attempt at surround. What am I doing with it? I'm getting rid of the centre channel. Ha ha, that'll cheer somebody up. Centre channel's gone. And I'm imitating as much as possible the Gerson approach with head ones here for the four speakers, one to the front, one to the rear, one to the side, one to the side, and of course these four evenly spaced. And my plan is to create, get some four, eight loudspeakers mounted properly in a room for them to hear birdsong, and I'll lend this to them to go into the woods. Or in London, in England, it's hell trying to record birdsong because of the cars and aircraft. So, you know, the African, or the, where is it, South American rainforest is the place I'd love them to go, if they've got enough strength to hold it. It is heavy. But you could put it on a stand if I modified the holding, because it keeps bending, and you could leave it there and let it record while you're, you know, elsewhere in the forest. Nobody'd pinch it. And of course, you could get some Rycoat cover windshielding on the lot as an extra to the those. Well, I think it has. Somebody said, I'll use balsa wood. Well, how much sound would go through it and prevent the directionality you think you're achieving by the solid thing? That's my view.
But so you wouldn't do like a carbon fiber one?
Not really. No, it's all glued together with bits of wood and cardboard. The paint I use is blackboard paint. The great thing about that is it's you dissolve it with water. You don't have to have any of those horrible liquids. Did he drop it? Huh. Yeah, I'm not happy with that business yet. There's a way round that, as we did with that one. There is a way round it, which I haven't done it on that one. The way round it is I put a piece of wood around the outside. Anyway, time-wise, we're all right. Any thoughts? Because, you know, I think you've been interested and... thanks very much.
I think you'd have a heart attack if you costed out the replacement cost of all those microphones.
Yes, yeah. Yeah. Wouldn't it, John?
Well, we can ask for Francis when I wish. Okay. Like when you get a synthesized figure of eight.
Yeah, with space cardioids, yeah.
Now, one of the characteristics of a figure of eight type microphone
is single diaphragm.
It has very good uniformity of Perler diagram.
Yeah.
Have you guessed such a similar uniformity?
Well, I've never chased it, but you know, if the cardio is the same level and same make and decent quality to start with, it depends how far apart they are. The original sound fields were 20 millimeters apart.
Right.
So it's the top octave we're in trouble with having spaced derived figure of eights. Yeah. It's only the box that's rattling. Look, I'd like to leave you with this thought as a final thing. These are the same capsules as are in the jolly old SPS 200. I bought them from Soundfield, and there they are. It's a wooden box they're in, except there's aluminium in here because the amplifiers are in here to convert to phantom power. And lo and behold, when you use a Soundfield, you may in the end, depending what you're going to use it for, actually create a cardioid forward, a cardioid back, a cardioid that way, a cardioid that way, a cardioid up and cardioid down. With the WXYZ, you would go that far if you were doing the whole range of things. So why not start with them? You can instantly get WXYZ, Omni, and make a figure of eight forward and back, a figure of eight side to side, and a figure of eight up and down. Or you can do it slightly shorter than that by using the cardioid and decoding straight away with it, whatever direction you want to go. Trouble is, these are something like 70 millimeters apart, and that really will trouble you. But it's just an experiment I've done, and they are interested in my getting results with it. But I must do some comparison recordings. That's the only thing I can say. So there we are. It's that way around normally. And it's called the hexagonal array instead of the tetrahedral array.
AM86 that Nyman made, that was interesting, as much as that two cardioids, but very close back to back.
Exactly. I don't dispute the closer they are, the more theoretically it's right. Because a ribbon is just uniquely, you know. I mean, I understand. But it, you can decode and get the stereo from it and all the rest of it, you know. They're about 70 centimetres apart, millimetres apart.
What's stopping from coming closer?
Well, I've got to redesign it, you know. It's the old story, the prototype and DIY. The wires have got to come out and disappear. I mean, you hold that again and I'll bring the other thing over. These are 40 and they recognise they're a bit farther than they would like. Well, quite.
And you shave a bit off it.
Well, I wouldn't dispute you could maybe get it down to something nearer 40 than 70. I don't dispute that.
Can I just ask, I mean, why did they depart from their original configuration of those very close lights?
Well, they've still got them in the ST350 and the other things with their separate analog decoding.
Yeah, I think there's less engineering involved in making that rather than making a cluster to hold four capsules on their own little...
That makes a sound field affordable for people who can never afford a sound field.
I mean, if you open up sound fields and old ones,
that's 1,500 quid and you've got the software to decode it.
But my argument about...
3,000, 4,000, 5,000, so that's
the sound tetramite.
My point about you bringing up the whole business of spacing apart, there's a problem, surely, with the figure of eight with those over there, because you're not just using two of them to do it, you're using four of them to do the figure of eight.
Well, it depends which orientation the figure of eights are. If you want a figure of eight in that direction,
well, again, you're not covering one vector. You know, you've got pointing upwards and grabbing a bit of the other vector.
Well, that's how it's people
just across. Yes, it is. But I'm sorry.
But in subtraction, you've got rid of the mid frequencies, you've got rid of the up down.
I don't dispute that, yeah. Yeah.
Because
I mean, creating a figure of eight, you've got a real null there. In an anechoic chamber, it disappears, you know.
I agree, but the high frequency is, of course, that figure of eight is going to be output.
Exactly, that's my argument, and I feel there's a better way of doing it.
Yes.
Whoops.
Well, it is really, except that it makes it bigger. Yeah.
Well, and it costs more to make because there's two more mics.
Yeah.
I'm glad there was time to say that. That's one of the things I wanted to mention. I finally got round to it. Look, time wise, we've got to finish, I'm sure, so.
So, Mike, somebody rings you up, they're doing a Verdi Requiem in a cathedral or something. How do you begin to choose? Well, which one of these magnificent microphone arrays are going to take along?
Good point you make. I'd probably.
You've done all the theory and you can do all these wonderful things.
Well,
which of these is the one you would choose for the job?
I mainly use the Shure CCM22 and it's eight, you know, these days on the grounds of doing a quartet in a church. You've got a slim mic stand, something like these things with a boom on it. Oh, well, regarding booms, have you ever had this happen? I had my 4038 and some other heavy mic and string quartet, and the viola player put his hand out just at the moment when it nearly arrived at the second violin. The boom did that. I saw it happening from the control room, so I rushed out and said, "My microphone, £1,000. My violin, £500,000. And it was stopped by that chap. So what do I do with the booms now? A chain. Put a chain on them. Whatever you do with a boom, even with nice light mics, you know, it pays to have a chain on it. And you need more than a chain on that one. I'm going to cure that problem with it, the stand, because I've got a way of using some wood to stop it. Anyway, look, any other thoughts? Because it's time to depart, I'm sure.
Is it probably safe to ask what you think of Dolby Atmos, Mark?
Well, cinema, you mean?
Well, the idea of vector audio, so you get away from a 5.1 with the centre, you get the height, you can have as many loudspeakers as you want in theory.
But it's mainly designed for big audiences, isn't it?
And it uses metadata.
Well, yeah, I mean, at the moment, the advantage in the home would be that you could almost have any... At the moment, in my home, nobody bothers to switch on the 5.5 television. I mean, I can be honest about
yeah.
that. It's just the novelty is worn off.
Hmm.
Does anybody else... That,
yes,
yeah. Well, I went to an AES meeting, was it? Or was it the Institute of Broadcast Sound? Where they had an array of speakers on the panels which made a very narrow wave hit the walls and come back, and they created 5.1 from that, remarkably. I forget what it was called.
Yes.
I went to see them over at Cambridge, you know, thinking I could write about it, but Audio Media weren't interested, so, typical. Oops, has that been recorded? Yeah. Anyway, you've obviously heard a lot of stuff, so thanks very much.
Yeah.